Welcome to the ProWrestling.net All Access Daily Podcast for Tuesday, September 19th, 2017. I am Jason Powell, and coming back for this brief break for non-members, my full review of Monday's WWE Raw. Raw was the go-home show for Sunday's No Mercy pay-per-view. Before we get into the show, I do want to tell you that you can join me on Sunday night for live coverage of No Mercy, and also on Friday night for live coverage of the Ring of Honor Death Before Dishonor pay-per-view event. Both shows will have exclusive audio reviews available to .net members shortly afterward. If you are interested in membership to ProWrestling.net, it is the ad-free version of the website as well as the ad-free version of the mobile site. Visit our main page at ProWrestling.net, click into the sign-up area, find three different pricing options, and choose the option that works best for you. If you have any questions, hit me up on Twitter, at ProWrestlingNet. With the business out of the way, let's get into Raw. They were in San Jose, California, at the SAP Center. And as I mentioned, this was the go-home show for No Mercy, and they had a bit of a challenge because John Cena was not in the building. Roman Reigns pointed that out, made it seem like it was some Hollywood thing, when the truth is that John Cena worked a house show for WWE in China on Sunday. And so they were not, he was never advertised for this show, and they planned that in advance. So they knew he wasn't going to be there. They kind of spun that to their advantage with the Reigns promo as much as they could. And also, Brock Lesnar was never advertised for this show. Now, he did appear for a sit-down interview that I assume was taped the week before. They got creative with that, with Cole starting the promo or the questioning in front of the live crowd. So they actually had Brock on the show, but not there in person. So it's still, it's two of the big four for this particular pay-per-view that were unable to appear in person on this show. And so it was a bit challenging. That said, I felt like they did a pretty nice job of occupying the time when you consider they were down two major talents. I didn't come away overwhelmed by the final push for No Mercy, but I didn't come away feeling like I wasted 3 hours of my time and I'm dreading No Mercy either. Kind of in between, I guess. Given the circumstances, I give them a thumbs up in terms of the final push for No Mercy. And I did like the way that they got to the number one contender for the Intercontinental Championship. We'll get into that a little bit later. They had a six-way match, a six-pack challenge to determine that. And then that was really probably the most newsworthy element of the show as far as modern WWE. I would say the other big news is the way they presented the video packages, or I guess just the one big video package, but also a couple of different segments where they paid tribute to the late, great Bobby Heenan, who died, of course, on Sunday at the age of 72. And they opened the show with the memorial graphic. And I was like, man, that's a nice touch. I sure hope there's more to it than that for Bobby Heenan. And there's a lot of people over the years where let's be honest, it felt like this company could have done more. There were people who meant a lot to the company that they just, kind of stuck to the graphic, and in some cases didn't even do that. But in this case, they did a nice job. You had the graphic, you had a couple of different, listing of various Twitter messages from some big-name personalities within WWE, and then they also had a video package that aired kind of chronicling his WWF years. Not like, year by year or anything like that, but just kind of touching on some of the more comedic elements of Bobby Heenan's time with the company. Did a little bit of his relationship with Gorilla Monsoon as well, as far as the on-air aspect of it goes. If you're a fan of the AWA like I am, then you probably came away a little disappointed that they did not feature any footage of Bobby Heenan from his long AWA run, his long and successful AWA run. Nothing with he and Nick Bockwinkel. I can't say I'm surprised. So, am I slightly disappointed? I'm disappointed, but it's like when you're not expecting it, when you just kind of assume they're going to stick with WWF footage, how really, truly disappointed can you be? So that's where I say, I wish they would have, but I'm not surprised that they just kind of stuck to the WWF. I don't really understand the decision. After all, they own the AWA library, and there was plenty of things they could have picked from. But unfortunately, nothing with Bobby Heenan and Nick Bockwinkel or any of Heenan's time in the AWA. But I think the most important thing is they did go above and beyond what they typically do to to pay respects to one of their fallen colleagues, in this case, the great Bobby Heenan. The broadcast team was Michael Cole, Corey Graves, and Booker T, and we opened up with Kurt Angle coming to the ring, and he was talking about No Mercy. Cole called it the biggest pay-per-view of Angle's career. The Miz entrance music interrupted Angle. He came out to the ring with Curtis Axel and Bo Dallas. No Maryse. Michael Cole did note that the couple is expecting, and therefore she was not with him. And he was complaining that this was going to be the second time in a row that he did not defend the Intercontinental Championship on the pay-per-view. And Angle said, well, you know, had you not interrupted me, I was going to get to that. He was going to go with Matt Hardy against Jeff Hardy against Elias and Jason Jordan in a four-way match to determine the number one contender. Miz didn't like the fact that Curtis Axel and Bo Dallas were excluded. And so what happened eventually, after Miz had insulted Kurt Angle about not being there from day one for Jason Jordan as he's going to be for his child, enter Jason Jordan. Jordan comes out and basically says that, yeah, he wants this, you know, the one he would like this to be a six-way. Give him his way so he has no excuse when I beat him, I think was the line that he used. And so sure enough, it was the previous four plus Axel and Dallas in a six-pack challenge, with the winner getting the title shot at No Mercy on Sunday. Then we had some hype for the upcoming segments. The only thing worth noting here is that they were saying that Roman Reigns would deliver his final message to John Cena prior to No Mercy. So we knew at that point, okay, you know, barring a surprise appearance, John Cena, they're not advertising him for this show. You know, they didn't on their website in the live event section or on the arena website, but this was kind of confirmation of that, because it's like, well, it's John Cena. You know, they can, if anyone's going to find a way to get back from China and make it to Raw, I guess it would be John Cena, but it was a no-go this time around. Don't know if he was at, I didn't even record Dancing with the Stars, just not my show. I'm guessing he didn't make it there either, but I don't know for sure. I mean, his fiancée, Nikki Bella, competing on that show. Best of luck to her, of course, but so I don't know if he was in attendance. I know going into the show, they were saying, like, the Bella family would be there, but I don't know that John was able to make it, so if anyone, I guess I'll look it up when I'm done here. I was going to say, if anyone knows, you can feel free to email me, but by the time you do, I'll have found out one way or another. Backstage, Angle told an intense Jason Jordan to focus on his opportunity. Jordan was upset. He said he hears the whispers, he sees the looks when he walks through the hallways, and Jordan said it will stop when they see what he does to Miz. And Angle was kind of trying to be the voice of reason here, saying, are you going to beat up everyone if they don't stop? And Jordan said, I didn't ask for this. And Angle said, basically gave him a pep talk about winning the match and going on to challenge Miz on Sunday. I like the way Jordan came off here. He showed some intensity. He wasn't whiny. You know, the material was borderline whiny, but that's one of the things that I hear Jason Jordan talk, and just when he's trying to be the nice guy, there's just something to the tone that comes off a bit whiny, where here, the material was a bit whiny, but he showed some, I guess, aggression, some, you know, just a little bit of an edge while he was delivering it. It made me feel like, okay, they can go a couple of different ways with this. That edge is what he needs if they're going to continue to try to push him as a babyface. That said, if the long-term plan is to turn Jason Jordan heel, well, he's doing a good job of going from the nice guy who started to get sick of the way people were treating him. And in his mind, they're whispering, they're talking behind his back, that sort of a thing, because he's the storyline son of Kurt Angle. And so he's, either way, I think he played this well. I haven't really been a fan of Jason Jordan on the mic, because they've just had him be so bland until now, and this was a nice step in the right direction. The opening match on the show was the only advertised match. It was Nia Jax beating Alexa Bliss in a non-title match in 6 minutes and 40 seconds. You had Alexa try to leave at one point, but Sasha Banks came out and blocked her on the ramp, and Alexa turned and ran from her. Like, she's beaten her. Why is she running from her to get back to the ring to face Nia Jax, who she is understandably, her character is deathly afraid of? Well, she ended up running right into Nia, and they went to a commercial. And the finish of this, you had Bliss diving from the top rope, Jax catching her and performing a Samoan drop and pinning her clean. So, and I think it was Graves who was quick to say that you have to look at Jax as the odds-on favorite going into Sunday. Then afterwards, you had Banks attack Jax from behind. Jax kind of ended up no-selling things. Bayley's music played. She came out, and Jax motioned for her to enter the ring. Bayley did, and joined Bliss and Banks in charging at Jax and knocking her to the mat. And then you had Nia roll away, so that was it for her. And then Banks and Bayley were hugging and raising arms. And then Bliss tried to get between them and join them in raising arms together. But Banks and Bayley were not having that. And Banks ended up kicking Bliss a couple of times. And then Bayley hit her finisher on her. So Bayley is back. She is not advertised for the match on Sunday. I thought we might see something with Emma later in the show. I was wondering, okay, they kept her out of this segment. Are they going to have her win or lose if she worked a match later in the show? Did they want to establish that, hey, you know, she's kind of a late scramble to go, look, she can win a match? Or was it going to be, oh, man, she lost again. She's clearly the weak link. You know, like they're trying to establish that. They didn't do anything. So I guess just because they didn't do anything, I guess they go into this with Emma looking like the weak link just because she loses so many matches compared to these other women. The broadcast team checked in and hyped both No Mercy and Hell in a Cell as part of the 30-day free trial for new network subscribers. And then they hyped some other things. They went to another commercial break, and then we ended up with, this is where they've showed the first batch of tweets regarding the passing of Bobby Heenan. They had Vince McMahon, Ric Flair, Chris Jericho, Jerry Lawler, and Daniel Bryan tweets shown. Then the broadcast team sat at their desk and Cole talked about the tributes to Heenan and said they would continue throughout the evening. And I was really happy to hear that. It was like, good. You know, as soon as I saw the batch of tweets, I was like, all right, that's a good step. And when he said that, it's like, good. It's going to be more than just, you know, that opening graphic, obviously. And that's important. I just think, you know, again, there have been many others who have deserved more than WWE has given them when it comes to this sort of a thing. But I'm happy to see they made some attempt to get it right with Bobby Heenan. Then we ended up with a video package on the Lesnar and Strowman match for No Mercy. And it had Paul Heyman in 2002 talking about how dominant Brock Lesnar was. And then a lot of recent footage that kind of recapped how Strowman has been so dominant. And they hyped a sit-down interview with the two for later in the show. Then we had Sheamus and Cesaro make their entrance. They went to a commercial break. The idea was that they were going to face Karl Anderson and Luke Gallows. The ad for SmackDown teased some follow-up to Kevin Owens and Vince McMahon's angle from last week, questioning how Shane McMahon is going to react, so I assume Shane is going to be there, and then also hyping the AJ Styles and Baron Corbin match that will be for the U.S. Championship. And, of course, you can join Jake Barnett for live coverage of that show coming up on Tuesday night as it airs on USA Network. Jake will be doing the live coverage at 7 Central, 8 Eastern, as he does every Tuesday, so be sure to follow along with his live coverage and commentary. We had a promo from Sheamus and Cesaro in the ring. They just talked about nostalgia and how they like to destroy it, like the Hardy Boys. They questioned what could go wrong now that Dean Ambrose and Seth Rollins are reunited. And Cesaro ended up saying it's going to go very wrong when they get their hands on them. The crowd did start to give Sheamus the what treatment, so Cesaro just kind of repeated the line about Ambrose and Rollins using each other for their own selfish needs a couple of times, trying to shut that down, or at least play into it, get the crowd to chant a little stronger. But I kind of got a kick out of the way he handled that. And they just basically tried to establish that Rollins and Ambrose really don't like one another. Their friendship is fragile and about to break. Then Rollins and Ambrose came out, and I guess we're not getting that tag match that they talked about. Rollins had a line saying that the way Sheamus and Cesaro dress before their matches is like Taxi Driver and Braveheart having ugly babies. That's a pretty good comparison there. And then Ambrose talked about how brothers fight sometimes, but a real brother would never let his brother leave the house dressed like Sheamus and Cesaro. Out came Anderson and Gallows, and this was kind of what they usually do. They were playing on the whole brother thing that Ambrose had talked about, and the whole not good brothers. This whole good brothers thing didn't start in WWE, never really been explained well in WWE. It's not really working. With some crowds, that whole nerd thing works. And then what I did get a kick out of was that whenever Anderson would finish a sentence, you'd have Gallows saying either yep or Nope. That was kind of fun. Ambrose acted really bothered by being called a nerd. And Rollins was like, oh, no. Oh, you shouldn't have done that. And then Ambrose ended up attacking Ambrose and, or I'm sorry, Ambrose ended up attacking Anderson and Gallows. And then all three teams brawled heading into the break. We got one of two Asuka teasers coming that came out of this break. We had another one later in the show, just in case I forget to mention it. And she's still listed as coming soon, so no official date for her main roster debut yet. The second match, they announced that it was Kurt Angle turned it into a triple threat during the commercial break, and this was a long match. It was Sheamus and Cesaro beating Luke Gallows and Karl Anderson and Dean Ambrose and Seth Rollins in 18:40. So they definitely wanted to kill some time with this. And the crowd was fairly quiet. They weren't like red hot for this. But down the stretch, they did start to chant, "This is awesome," in regards to a couple of suicide dives that Ambrose and Rollins ended up performing. They hit. They were going to opposite sides of the ring. They took out two guys with one, and then the next time they took out their other two opponents. The crowd was into that. And then in the end of this, you had Sheamus making a blind tag. And you had Ambrose hitting dirty deeds on Anderson, and then Sheamus entering the ring after tagging Ambrose and throwing him to ringside and then stealing the pin. So Sheamus and Cesaro go over that way. I mean, this didn't really leave me more excited about seeing the tag title match on Sunday, but it didn't take away anything. You know, that's kind of one of the themes of this show. There was very little about it that made me really more excited about seeing No Mercy. But I didn't come away from it feeling like, eh, man, they kind of took the wind out of my sails for this or anything like that. So this was fine. It ate up a lot of television time on a night when I guess they needed to have a lot of television time eaten because they were two big stars down. Then you went backstage where Miz was talking with Axel and Dallas about the six-pack challenge. And this ended up with basically the idea was that Dallas said he can't wait to steal the show with him at No Mercy, and Axel said that he wasn't going to take it easy on Miz on Sunday when he won. Then we had Graves hype that match for later in the show. They went to a commercial break. We ended up with, it must have been a sponsored video. I was trying to catch up on some things, and I just saw the end of the video package that showed Edge winning Money in the Bank. I believe it was WrestleMania 25. So I'm guessing it was just one of those sponsored flashbacks things that they do, because there was no real connection to this show. And then the broadcast team set up a video package on Cena and Reigns. The idea was that it showed how their careers paralleled. For those waiting to see if maybe, just maybe, Undertaker gets involved, Reigns beating him was chronicled, so they did show that. Then they focused on how both men won titles, the Royal Rumble, and defeated Icons, and that's where Taker was shown. At the midpoint of the show, Kurt Angle was on the phone backstage when he noticed Goldust standing in his office. Goldust had was facing the wall, so you couldn't see his face, and Angle ended the call and asked Goldust if he could help him. Well, Goldust turned around, and he was not wearing any makeup, or face paint, whatever you prefer. Goldust said that he wanted a second chance against Bray Wyatt, and Angle was hesitant for some reason, just because I guess the match ended so quickly last week, and he said he wasn't asking as Goldust. He was asking as the man behind the paint, Dustin Rhodes. And he said they've known each other for 20 years, and Angle knew his father. He was asking as a man and a friend, because he wanted to show Wyatt that he's not a pawn in his twisted game with Finn Balor. Angle eventually agreed to do it, and Goldust said that Wyatt would never forget the name of Dustin Rhodes. Then we had Kurt Hawkins standing in the ring with a mic, and he said he's normally there to make stars, but the Star Factory is officially closed. He said that he is the Hawkins history machine instead, and he talked about how his 114-match losing streak was going to come to an end. He said he felt healthy for the first time in a long time, and his opponent would be nothing more than a footnote in history and the answer to a trivia question. Well, that opponent was Apollo Crews, who made it 115. He beat Kurt Hawkins in 215. Titus O'Neil was with Crews. I like the idea of Kurt Hawkins being framed this way. I think there's a lot of different things you can do with it as far as like this losing streak is concerned. It could just be as simple as, well, it's comical to see how far it's going to go. The other part of it is, do you kind of flip the fans? Do you, you know, set him up in a position where he is against a heel, and he eventually, you know, you build up to him finally getting that big win. So there's some fun you can have with it. I'm just kind of covering a couple of them. But I like this. Just that little promo. It was more than just his usual weird promo where you know he's going to put the other guy over. In this case, I assumed he was, but it still made me pay more attention to the match. And so I think it's a fun idea. We'll see how creative they get with it. He did get a couple of near falls here, but it was Cruz going over with his set-out powerbomb for the win. So 115 matches is what they're saying Curt Hawkins, the current streak, has had, for those keeping score at home. Then Cole hyped the sit-down interview, and they went to another break. And then you had the broadcast team briefly talk about the Pediatric Awareness Month and the campaign they're doing. And then Cole interviewed Strowman, Lesnar, and Heyman. They were all on the big screen, kind of a split screen kind of a deal. And Cole, you could actually hear him asking the questions in the arena. And then Cole asked Lesnar about being the underdog. Heyman was interrupting and just kind of talking about how he was the underdog going into the match with Undertaker at WrestleMania, and we all know how that ended, that sort of a thing. And he asked Lesnar how he prepares for Strowman. Heyman again interrupted and talked about how just because Braun Strowman was able to stand up from one German suplex doesn't mean that he can survive Suplex City. Strowman said that he's going to stomp it to the ground. And Heyman said Strowman woke up the beast, and now Lesnar knows that it will take more than one suplex. And Heyman said it's going to be Suplex City all night long. Strowman claimed the ball was in his court. Eventually, we got Brock Lesnar putting his hand up, and that silenced Paul Heyman. And Lesnar looked into the camera and thanked Strowman for backing him into the corner and challenging him. And he said, "That's when I'm at my best." And he said he would see him Sunday. And then closed with, "Suplex City, bitch." And that was it. I liked it. As I noted in my live review, I thought it would have been cool. And I don't know, I don't even have an idea of what line you come up with. Would have been kind of fun if Braun Strowman had a comeback to that. Some, you know, a catchphrase of his own. Now, I don't want to see necessarily Braun become all about a catchphrase like this whole Suplex City thing. But I think it would have been kind of cool if you're used to Lesnar, you know, when he speaks, closing things with that, with this whole game of that, you know, Braun has his number. Would have been kind of a nice touch if Braun had something like that to come back with. But he didn't. It was fine. Lesnar speaking last and speaking confidently did kind of go a little bit against the story they've been telling, which is that Strowman is dominating him, and he is the favorite. Lesnar was a little convincing when it came to, you know, the fact, you know, the whole Suplex City bitch, and it wasn't like this was a champion who seemed nervous or anything, but I still liked it. And I mean, I don't know if you want a champion nervous go in when it's like, you know, two big guys like this, two monsters going at it. And so I didn't come away from feeling more excited about Strowman going into it, but it didn't by any means, lessen my enthusiasm for this match. This is going to be a lot of fun. And I'm genuinely curious to see how they book this, you know, who ends up coming out on top if there is a clean finish. Where do they go? I think it's going to be a lot of fun. And with Lesnar not in attendance, they did a good job of working him into the show. So well done by WWE. Then you had Roman Reigns make his entrance, a lot of boos, and then he was in the ring, and he listened to the fans boo for a little bit before speaking, and he said, "I've said this before, I'd boo this too." I'm like, huh? And then he said that Cena might be the best talker ever. He said the guy can spin things and he can run his mouth, but sometimes he just says stupid shit. And he was censored, of course, for the shit line. And he took exception to Cena calling him a wannabe Cena. "Do I walk, talk, or look like Cena?" he asked. And he asked if I look like a jacked up white guy with a giant head and a military crew cut. He said, "If I did, I wouldn't have a career. You don't believe me? Ask Alex Riley about that." Like, okay, that's why Alex Riley, they thought he looked too much like John Cena or something? It was kind of a strange line out of nowhere. But then you had Reigns talking about how he lets his actions speak for themselves. And he called Cena a fake-ass little bitch because he is, he said. And he also called him the biggest hypocrite to ever step foot in a WWE ring. So you don't believe me? John Cena will tell you himself. And he set up footage from February of 2012 of Cena badmouthing The Rock for going Hollywood, basically. And they, you know, made sure to show the way this closed because it came back at the end of Roman's promo. And then he started playing to the crowd, asking them, "Should we bring out John Cena?" And of course the crowd cheers. I'm afraid that's not going to be loud enough because John's not here. And he claimed that everything Cena said in his promo was a lie, and that's why the result will be the same at No Mercy as it was at that WrestleMania, only it's going to be a different Samoan beating him. Reigns played on Cena's closing line from that promo by saying he would see San Jose next time, for sure. And then he added, "And John, I'll see you Sunday, movie star," which is the same thing that Heyman had said about, it's the same thing that Cena had said about Rock during that promo. Roman ended up dropping the mic, just as John Cena did, to close his promo, too. I like this. I thought Roman showed good, heelish charisma. And I don't think that's what they had in mind, but I thought he did. You know, he just seems at home with the crowd booing him. I mean, I'd love to see them turn him heel. I don't think it's going to happen. I've kind of just, if it ever does, great. But I've kind of thrown my hands up in that regard. I thought he was really good here. I thought this was some of his best mic work. Granted, it was, you know, heavily framed for him, and which is fine. I thought his delivery was good. I liked the way they played in with, you know, to the Cena Rock program. I've been saying that, you know, the end result, I assume, is very much like Cena Rock, where this end, whether it's at No Mercy or somewhere down the road, whenever this program is over, Cena passes the torch, just as Rock did for him. So we'll see if that plays out, but I still enjoyed this, and I don't know why they decided to make Alex Riley's night, or to pick on him tonight, however you want to look at it. I'm guessing if I'm him, I'll take the extra attention. Thanks. But they did. Again, without John Cena there, I thought they made the most of the situation. I'd like to see John Cena show up on SmackDown. I mean, I know, you know, who knows what his schedule is, you know, having just gone overseas and all that. But I thought that would have been a nice touch if they could have advertised, said, yeah, we're keeping these two apart. They're so close to, you know, coming to blows, as you've seen, that we want to keep them apart. And so Roman Reigns is going to be on Raw this week. John Cena, the free agent, he can be on SmackDown, so he will be on SmackDown to make his final statement. And obviously the idea being that, well, Cena couldn't beat Ross, but you can have him at SmackDown, if that's possible. They didn't advertise anything, but the reason I say that, I think it would be a nice touch. He's one of those few guys that is, you know, according to their storyline rules, is able to appear on both shows. And so you could have had Roman deliver final hype for that match on the Raw side, Cena do it on SmackDown. Plus, you know, had they advertised it, I think it would have given a nice little boost to SmackDown in terms of viewership as well. I came away from this, not necessarily looking forward to the match more, maybe slightly. It was nice not to have the back-and-forth insult this time. I mean, Cena has torn Roman to shreds. This was the first time that I think Reigns may have scored some points when it comes to... I've heard from some readers and listeners who think that he has been the better of the two. I just strongly disagree with that, because everything you can say about John Cena has basically been said before, with the exception of this. You know, he went there. He finally brought up Cena being a hypocrite. I guess the only problem with it is, you know, Cena's addressed this in the past, calling his previous comments about The Rock basically idiotic. But still, you know, it was good for Roman to kind of score some points while talking about John Cena for a change, and I really liked his delivery. I thought he did a really nice job here. Renee Young interviewed Matt and Jeff Hardy backstage and asked what was going to happen if that six-pack challenge came down to the two of them. Talked about how they've been fighting since Jeff first came out of the crib. All that innovative offense they've tried has actually been tried on each other first. And Jeff said he's going to seize the moment at No Mercy. Matt told him he has to make it there first. And Jeff said may the best Hardy win, and Matt said he will. So it wasn't very tense. It was this one certainly didn't make me go, ooh, I need to see this. It just kind of seemed like going through the motions, babyface partners, in this case brothers, trying to tease something that really wasn't going to be a big deal in this particular match. Doesn't mean they won't down the road, but for now anyway, I didn't come away feeling like, ooh, man, something's going to happen here. Then we had Bray Wyatt make his entrance. They went to a commercial. This is where the second Asuka teaser aired. Still coming soon. Then we had some still shots of the demon persona of Finn Balor beating Bray Wyatt at SummerSlam. Then Dustin Rhodes made his entrance. He came out to the Gold Dust theme, and he was wearing the Gold Dust outfit, just minus the face paint. But he was introduced by ring announcer JoJo as Dustin Rhodes, And it was all this build up so that Bray Wyatt could beat him in 2 minutes and 30 seconds. It was really weird at the end. You had Dustin setting him up for Shattered Dreams, and the broadcast team got excited, talking about they hadn't seen this in a while. And rather than, the idea was that he kicked him in the balls, right? Well, rather than do that, he kicked him, in the inner thigh. And they even called it that. They talked about that. And then he kicked him on the other thigh. And then Bray Wyatt just came right back and hit Sister Abigail for the win. It's like, what? It didn't even make any sense. So I can't imagine they're going to follow up on this. It wasn't like the broadcast team was questioning why he didn't kick him in the balls, why he chose the inner thigh instead. But it was really just underwhelming. It was like, hey, Bray's the guy going on to face Finn Balor at the pay-per-view. Goldust doesn't have a match. I wasn't expecting something big here, but maybe a little more competitive. Or maybe Finn Balor comes out and Dustin Rhodes is protected and they pick this up after the pay-per-view. Something other than just, Dustin Rhodes loses again. And quickly. And decisively. Then we went to Finn Balor appearing on the big screen and talking about a little boy who read books about gods and monsters and desperately wanted to be greater than what was given to him. Talked about how that boy became a man and learned how to control his rage by manifesting it into something like the gods and monsters from the books. He said that the man created a demon. And he said, I want to ask you a very important question, Bray. If the demon is a creation of the man, which one is more dangerous? I like that line. I thought it was well done. Bray kind of laughed at it like he was impressed by what he said. It wasn't like laughing at it and rolling his eyes by any means. And so it was, clever promo. And Balor said, told Wyatt that they would find out at No Mercy. This didn't leave me more excited to see their match, I can tell you that. But I haven't been all that fired up about it. Not that they're going to work poorly together or anything like that. It's just, it feels like a mid-card match, It's just kind of there. That's what it is. And so I can't say that I'm, it felt like they did what they needed to do at SummerSlam. It was time to move on. And it's just like every Bray Wyatt feud, it feels like it's just kind of dragging on. Then Enzo Amore was shown shaking hands with random people backstage. We got another batch of Bobby Heenan tweets, this time Triple H, Goldberg, Christian, Jim Ross, Mick Foley, Stephanie McMahon, and Peter Rosenberg tweets were shown. And then Michael Cole sat at the announce desk and talked about in 1993, Bobby Heenan called Raw at the same desk. And then basically they set up this video pack. It was kind of weird, though. Booker, you had Cole saying nice things about him, saying he and Gorilla may have been the great, or actually just said definitively, they were the greatest commentary team in WWE history. Graves recalled when Monsoon threw Heenan and his belongings out of the building in a funny episode on Raw. And then Booker said that Heenan called a lot of his matches. And after Michael Cole just said that Heenan and Gorilla were the greatest commentary team in WWE history, you end up having Booker T trying to, make a joke saying that Heenan was probably the best commentator to call any of his matches, and then he got all touchy with Michael Cole and was laughing at his own joke like it was a joke on Michael Cole. Just felt like an awkward time for it. Didn't need to see him get all Michael Irvin weird and touchy. I don't know if Michael Irvin still does that, but it used to drive me nuts when he would host NFL pregame shows, and he always felt the need to reach over and touch the people he was doing the show with, and laugh at his own jokes. So I've always called Booker T the Michael Irvin of WWE, and Booker's been better lately, but this just felt like awkward, not a place, and it didn't make sense, and Cole was endorsing Bobby Heenan and Gorilla together. Anyway, you had the video package that I talked about. I'm not going to go through it all, but I wish there was some AWA footage. I certainly wish there was some Nick Bockwinkel in there, but I'm happy they did this. I'm happy that they did more than they do for a lot of people. And it was, I thought, a little bit on the light side where they didn't really get into some of the more serious aspects. There wasn't a great focus on WrestleMania 3, but still, I thought it was well done, and I'm happy that they went out of their way to do more for Bobby Heenan than they've done for a lot of other people. Enzo Amore came out after the break, and he started to do, after the video, and then he started to do some mic work on the ramp. Braun Strowman came out and just bulldozed him, dragged him to the ring. Enzo's just playing it like he's absolutely, just a limp body there. Drags him to the ring, throws him inside through the ropes, Fans, there were some fans chanting, "Thank you, Strowman," as he picked up Enzo and choke slammed him, picked him up again and power slammed him. And then he left the ring. Neville was coming out at the same time Braun was getting to the top of the ramp. And Neville kind of backed off, made sure he kept his distance, and he kind of looked Strowman up and down in a way that kind of said, like, man, you know, he's impressed by this. That's kind of the way I read it. And then he went to the ring, and he performed the Red Arrow on Enzo. And he called for the mic, and he mocked Enzo's dance and said, "How are you doing?" And then he just laughed maniacally, and that was the end of the segment. This was fun. I mean, I like, you know, on one hand, I like that they're giving you that, hey, anything can happen. You know, you got to keep your guard up. You don't want to flip channels, because who would have guessed that Braun Strowman was going to destroy Enzo Amore when, you know, just randomly like this. So it does send the right message. Don't be changing the channel. At the same time, it's week two of the NFL season, Monday Night Football season, and if you're going to have Braun Strowman appear in person, you know, it might have been a good idea for, you know, at the beginning of the show to say that, you know, we don't know when he's going to strike, but Braun Strowman has made it clear that he is going to at some point this evening. And it's a little hook that keeps people watching. And it still kind of sends that same message that, well, you don't know when the hell it's going to be. So I guess that's the only criticism I have, but I thought in terms of just cementing Braun as a monster one more time before he faces Lesnar, it was fine. Then we had the broadcast team recap that segment. I believe it was Charlie Caruso. They don't like to talk about their backstage personalities and refer to them by name for some reason, at least way more often than not. But she approached Enzo, who was lying on a trainer's table with ice on him, and she just starts asking him a question. Like, this is really awkward. You wouldn't see this in professional sports. Somebody's lying on a trainer's table, and, you know, here's the backstage interviewer, the locker room person, sneaking in with a microphone to ask them a question as they're being tended to by a physician. No, you would not get this. But anyway, Enzo spoke about how he's still going to beat Neville. So he was destroyed, but he wasn't, you know, like, ready just to call off the match or anything. Fifth match, Neville stuck around because I thought, like, they went to a commercial after them, like, this is probably their only cruiserweight moment of the week again. Couldn't have been more wrong because, well, coming out of the break, we had Neville beating Grand Metalik in 3:20. It was a non-title match. Boy, what? I don't get it. They were very excited by Grand Metalik, and he's just another guy on this show. Took him forever to get, you know, positioned as a regular on 205 Live, and now that he's there, they're just not doing anything with him. You know, and I thought, well, maybe they're saving him and get through this thing with Enzo, whether it's Grand Metalik, if they can start to give him some sort of a big build-up, or Cedric Alexander, maybe one of those two guys is next in line. Well, I can't imagine it's Grand Metalik because he just was beaten clean by Neville here. Caught him with the boot as he was coming off the top rope and then applied the Rings of Saturn and got the win that way. So nothing special. It wasn't like they tried to showcase Grand Metalik in any way. So a very disappointing run for him in WWE thus far. Then it was time for a Hispanic Heritage Month video. Yes, it's that time of year again. And the video was on, no, not Pedro Morales or Tito Santana or, you know, anyone who has any connection to WWE. Jennifer Lopez. This is bizarre. But thank you for that, WWE. Coming out of the next commercial break, we found out that Neville and Enzo will go face-to-face on 205 Live. Oh, my God. I can't wait to not watch 205 Live. But John Moore will have his review up on Wednesday morning, so you can look for that. I just have thrown my hands up with this show. John does a good job of reviewing it. Good enough for me. If I start to hear, hey, there's some good things on here, you need to see it, that's a different story. But I see enough as it is. It's just like they don't care about this show, and it's a shame. From a creative standpoint, I mean. Then we had Elias do his usual mic work. He doesn't like San Jose either. I know you're all surprised by this. Someday he's going to find a city that he loves. And at that point, I think he will stop drifting. He's just going to stay there forever. But he threatened to have a kid and his mother kicked out of San Jose for the kid looking at him wrong. I get a kick out of that. Then he sang a song about Jason Jordan being a failure just like everyone in San Jose. He was about to tie this in, I think, on the Miz Taraj. He had a line about them, but the Hardys interrupted him, and then we got the rest of the ring entrances, and then Jason Jordan let out, like, this dorky Howard Dean-like yell. It was a woo, but it just was like, oh, man, you had a good night earlier. Don't do that. Don't, you know, it's always weird when a wrestler is the absolute most excited by his ring entrance out of anyone in the entire arena. And that's how this was. You know, like he's out there pumping himself up and lets out this awkward sounding woo while everyone else is just kind of sitting there. It's like, eh, you might want to leave that woo thing out. Anyway, this was another one for Jason Jordan. He defeated Elias, Matt Hardy, Jeff Hardy, Bo Dallas, and Curtis Axel in a six-pack challenge in 11:30 to earn the Intercontinental title shot at No Mercy. Miz was at ringside for the match. And you had the Hardys go at it a little bit, not like trading blows or, you know, just really trading punches and things. You did, I mean, it was mostly roll-ups, but there was a twist of fate that Matt performed on Jeff, and he did go for a cover, and that was broken up. And there really, and it wasn't like they're, if you're looking for signs of a breakup between these two, they turn this into it? Sure, but it just kind of felt like tame, safe stuff, just to try to, you know, the whole every man for himself thing. So I don't know that this is going anywhere. I just kind of took it as, well, it's, again, it's the six-pack challenge. It's every man for himself. Late in the match, you had Jeff perform a swanton on Axel. He had him pinned. Miz broke that up. And then Jason Jordan performed a neckbreaker. He tossed up Axel into the air and caught him with a neckbreaker on the way down and pinned him. After the match, he had The Miz enter the ring, and he had a stare down with Jordan. He applauded Jordan, like, you know, it almost looked like he was being sincere for a second. Teased leaving, and then pulled The Miz by trying to take a cheap shot. Of course, Jordan saw that coming. He ducked it, hit Miz with a belly-to-belly and a neck breaker, and then Dallas and Axel ended up attacking Jordan from behind. Miz had them pick up Jordan, and he put him right back down with a skull-crushing finale. And then he took the mic and said that he will still be champion after No Mercy. He said, Angle will still be a terrible father, and Jordan will still be a bastard. Oh, no. In 2017, oh, my. Anything but that. But he held up the Intercontinental Championship, and that's how they closed the show. I mean, I mocked it. I guess if you're watching Game of Thrones, there's so much talk about bastard this, bastard. I mean, it feels like something that, you know, would have stung in the 60s and 70s, where these days, I mean, hey, I'm sure it's offensive to some. But for me, it was just like, it's so tame that, you know, you're a bastard. So I don't know. But the crowd did so maybe they were more into this than I was. Maybe they found it a little more hurtful than I did. I mean, I guess that's the storyline. And Miz is trying to get under his skin by saying that. But it really wasn't a strong show closing moment for me. That said, I find myself looking forward to the next installment of Miz and Jordan. I think they did some good work on here. That Howard Dean, you know, like woo aside, and not that Howard Dean yelled woo, but you know what I'm saying with the voice cracking and all of that. I came away from this just feeling like this was a good night for Jason Jordan. He had his usual solid night in the ring with some impressive big moves. And then on the mic again, I thought he delivered a pretty, you know, pretty nice, he had a pretty nice exchange with Kurt Angle backstage. And I thought he showed a little bit of fire there that he hasn't been showing. And so overall, yeah, I thought this was a nice night for Jason Jordan. It's not high on my list of matches that I'm anxious to see at No Mercy or anything. But I'm looking forward to this more than I guess I have the previous matches between Miz and Jason Jordan. So there's that. It's a nice under to mid-card type of match. No announcement on this show, and I had everything shut down because I was avoiding the score of the football game. So I'm not sure if there was any online announcement, but as far as I know, they have not announced the kickoff show match just yet, so I'm guessing we'll find that out sometime this week if it's not out there already. Of course, we'll have the details available at ProWrestling.net. Again, join me for live coverage of WWE No Mercy on Sunday, the ROH Death Before Dishonor show on Friday, and you can join Jake Barnett for live coverage of SmackDown on Tuesday. Plus, we'll have reviews available from John Moore on NXT. Also, the Lucha Underground show, 205 Live, Global Force. I guess they're not Global Force again. They're back to being Impact Wrestling. And then I'll also have my Ring of Honor television review up this week. Plus, all those shows will be reviewed in audio form. You may hear one or two of them here on the All Access side like this one, but know the .NET members hear them every single week. So if you were interested in membership, again, main page, ProWrestling.net is where you find the details. Any questions, hit me up on Twitter at ProWrestlingNet. Take a moment, please subscribe to our daily podcast. Rate and review us on iTunes, Stitcher, anywhere that takes those type of reviews. You're really helping us spread the word about this site and the podcast, and I really appreciate that. Until next time, everybody, thank you so much for listening. Take care.